completely, which, after his ill-advised entrance into the painting studio, made him wonder whom he was trying to avoid more. A coolly critical Clara? A hopefully clothed Lady Theodosia? Or his undoubtedly furious sister? Regardless, this cowering avoidance was very, very un-Duke-like behaviour. Hell, it was very un-August-like behaviour. And it made him want to cringe as much as it made him want to curse. And to top it all off, there had been no word yet from Duncan about any of the matters he had brought to the man's attention in the missive he'd sent to London. August was frustrated, impatient, and completely out of ideas. He cursed under his breath and dismounted, then led his horse toward the back of the house. A stable lad appeared with the seamless, brisk efficiency that he was beginning to associate with this place. August handed over his horse and stalked toward the dower house, yanking his coat off along the way. Clean clothes, a decent meal, and something fortifying to drink were in order. He banged into the hall, narrowly missing a footman who caught his coat without even blinking. A pile of objects in the centre of the small, gleaming hall caught his eye and stopped him short. A large, flat, square item, wrapped in coarse burlap and rope, was propped up against a portmanteau. A smaller case, one that might be used to hold documents, had been placed beside these. August spun to find Duncan down coming across the hall, a biscuit in one hand and another stuffed in his mouth. The man's clothes and boots were covered in dust and grime, and his hair and face hadn't fared much better. Hallelujah! Finally! He nearly gave in to the urge to hug the man.
"Where have you been?"
August demanded, instantly regretting his tone. He hadn't actually been expecting Duncan to come to Dover in person, only to forward him what he'd requested. But now that he was here, August was inordinately pleased to see him. Duncan raised his brows above his spectacles and continued chewing.
"Avondale House first, where a rather stodgy butler directed me in no uncertain terms to this dower house," he said once he had swallowed. "But before that, stuffed on a bloody mail coach."
"I'm sorry."
August ran a hand through his hair.
"It's been a trying few days."
Duncan glanced around him at the polished opulence.
"I can see that.
The mail coach, however, was nothing but sheer luxury."
August scowled.
"Point taken."
He gestured to the pile.
"What did you bring me?"
"Everything you asked for. I wasn't sure where you wanted everything, or where you wanted me, for that matter, so I had the footman leave everything here."
"You can have your pick of rooms upstairs,"
August replied, distracted, as he heaved the large square bundle upright.
"Is this the tavern sign?"
he asked.
"Yes." "And was it crafted as per the drawing?"
"See for yourself."
Duncan took a bite of his second biscuit. August pulled at the knots and tossed the rope aside, unwinding the burlap. He let the fabric fall to the ground with an appreciative whistle.
"It's stunning."
"It better be, given what it cost to have it completed in such a short time,"
Duncan mumbled through a mouthful of crumbs. The sign stood a little taller than August's waist and was about equally wide. It was painted a glossy ebony, a carved silhouette of a gliding swan dominating the centre. The silver swan was carved in an elegant script just below the image, while whimsical curlicues stretched out from the centre above. All the carving had been painted a brilliant white, flecks of silver embedded in the paint to give it a sparkling sheen.
"She's going to adore it," Duncan said, dusting crumbs from his hands.
"Who?"
"Lady Anne,"
August ran his hand over the top and fingered the two heavy hooks that had been mounted into the wood, one at each side.
"And why would you think Lady Anne has any interest in a tavern sign?"
"Because that sign was her sketch," Duncan said slowly.
"And how do you know that?"
"Because she showed it to me." He was watching August a little uncertainly.
"When?"
"I can't quite recall, Your Grace." August scowled again, wondering what the hell was wrong with him. He couldn't truly be thinking what he thought he was. That Anne and Duncan... He cut that notion off. If his sister had been badgering Duncan about the hotel books and laundries and fishmongers, it was quite likely she had been badgering him about tavern signs. And God only knew what else.
"Is something amiss, Your Grace?"
Duncan was peering at him with concern.
Yes, there was a great deal that was amiss. Nothing that concerned his man of business, however.
"What about the other two matters I asked you to look into?"
Duncan glanced around the hall, but it was deserted. He dropped his voice anyway. "As of 2 days ago, there was still no sign of Strathmore's ships. However, his lordship forwarded a payment on to his banker just before I left London."
"What? How?"
Duncan shrugged.
"For how much?"
Duncan shook his head. "I wasn't able to ascertain the exact amount, but it was substantial enough to prompt his banker to extend his loan an additional week." August stared at the swan, frozen in graceful lines in front of him. Where the hell had Strathmore gotten capital like that?
"And he has no other assets? Something we missed?"
"I looked again, but found no record of anything," Duncan confirmed.
"A man could have the map to El Dorado squirreled away and I wouldn't know it,"
August grumbled. "So it's not going well? With the Baron, I mean?" Duncan asked.
"I've managed to have a single conversation with him about business in the entire time I've been here. One in which he left halfway through, but not before he made it clear that he had no intention of selling Strathmore shipping, ever."
"Your calculated charm has failed?" August shot him a black look. His charm hadn't failed. It had deserted him altogether to be replaced with acute need and want and longing and a muddled sense of direction.
"He might yet change his mind," Duncan suggested.
"He will when his ships don't return and he's facing ruination. But maybe not even then if he's got more tricks up his sleeve that we don't know about."
"Well, he can't win them all, Your Grace. At the very least, you still have Haverhall." August shook his head. That didn't make him feel any better, and probably not for the reason Duncan would think.
"What about the other bit of information I asked you for?"
he said, changing the topic. "Mr. Matthias Stilton."
"Yes."
August kept his expression stony. He hadn't told Duncan why he had asked for information on the dandy, only that it was a business matter. "Jealousy does not become you, Your Grace." He wasn't jealous. He was thorough. If this man was in Clara Haywood's life, he wanted to find out how and why. There was no such thing as too much information.
"I would have thought you'd heard enough of Stilton when you'd bought that damn lace factory,"
Duncan mumbled as he strode over to the leather case, resting near the portmanteau, and rummaged through it, coming up with a piece of paper and what looked like an aged newspaper sheet. His face was mercifully blank as he straightened. "Mr. Matthias Stilton, age 41, originally from Southwark, only child of the late Jerome and Ellen Stilton. You know the part about his dismal business acumen, so I'll skip that bit. Moved to London after that, and married a woman of means named Emily Livett.
He's married?
Widowed. She died 2 years after they wed, leaving him the substantial parcel of land she'd brought to the marriage, which kept him in fine style before, and certainly after, her death. Though from what I hear, he's no longer popular with the merchants on Bond Street. He has a great number of outstanding debts, the least of which is to his tailor. August felt his fingers tighten on the edges of the sign. An unpleasant sensation curled through his gut.
How did his wife die?
He asked. Duncan unfolded an aged and somewhat brittle page of The Times. According to the paper, she drowned in a boating accident.
Witnesses?
August couldn't believe he was actually asking this, but his instincts were demanding his attention, and he always paid attention to his instincts. Just her distraught husband, though it says a good Samaritan pulled him out of the Thames, half-drowned himself after trying to save her. A picnic and punt on an idyllic afternoon turned tragic. Or at least that was what the account said. He passed the sheet to August. You don't think it was an accident? Duncan was reading his mind again.
I don't know. Either way, it left him a man of property and free to marry again should he wish it.
May I inquire why you are asking about him now? Duncan asked, his brows drawn together. Is he... The sound of the knocker on the heavy front door silenced the rest of his question, and the same footman who had disappeared with August's coat reappeared almost instantly to open the door. August blinked as Anne strode in, handing her gloves to the servant. She stopped short in surprise. Good heavens! Mr. Down? Lady Anne? Duncan offered her a bow. Good afternoon. You look radiant.
Thank you.
Anne smiled at Duncan, a genuine smile that caused her eyes to light up and made her radiant indeed.
I didn't know you were coming to Dover.
Nor did I until very recently. But I'm very glad I did. August stared at the two of them. Bloody hell, was his sister blushing? Anne's gaze turned abruptly to August, and some of that radiance faltered.
Good afternoon, August. I was hoping to catch you here so that we could talk.
Her words died suddenly as her gaze fell on the large sign August still gripped.
Oh.
Her hand went to her mouth. Duncan took a step back as Anne approached, her eyes fixed firmly on the tavern sign.
That's my sign,
she whispered, her brows drawn together.
The one I drew.
Yes,
said August, feeling suddenly uncomfortable. His sister had the most peculiar expression on her face. Anne reached out a hand and traced with her finger the carved curlicues that ran along the top.
I don't understand.
August cleared his throat.
What is there to understand? The current sign is in deplorable condition. I thought to have a new one made, and I rather liked your design. It was... expedient.
Expedient.
Anne looked up at him, her eyes brimming with what looked like unshed tears. Holy hell! Was she going to cry? He wasn't sure he had ever seen Anne cry.
Mr. Down brought it with him,
August rushed on.
I thought perhaps you might like to see it hung.
Yes,
she whispered. August suddenly found himself in an awkward hug, his sister embracing him over the top of the sign. He slid an arm around her back and squeezed.
Thank you, August,
she mumbled into the front of his coat.
You're very welcome.
He cleared his throat again because it seemed to have thickened inexplicably. Anne drew away and turned to Duncan, wrapping him in an impulsive embrace as well.
Thank you, Mr. Down.
It was my pleasure,
Duncan said, his eyes darting to where August stood. You're very talented. Anne extricated herself and turned back to the sign, crouching down and running her hand over the polished surface.
No more bats,
she said with a shaky laugh.
Or flamingos,
August muttered. She looked up at him, almost shyly.
I have some other ideas for the swan, she said. Maybe later I could show them to you.
August would have agreed to almost anything at that point, if only to keep the smile on her face.
That would be nice.
This is the best present you've ever given me, she said with a sniff.
But it's not even something for you, August protested. I didn't really give you anything.
Her eyes were shining.
That's not true. You made me your partner, and there is nothing in the world I value more.
August opened his mouth to say something, but words escaped him. There was so much joy emanating from Anne right now that he just wanted to take a moment to bask in her happiness.
I'll just head upstairs,
Duncan murmured tactfully from where he still waited.
Very well,
August replied, still distracted. Was there any other information regarding Stilton that you needed before I go?
Stilton?
Anne stood up from her crouch and put a hand on top of the sign.
Matthias Stilton?
Yes.
August frowned at her.
How do you know him?
I just met him. Not a half hour ago, he came to collect Miss Haywood for a drive.
August's eyes met Duncan's over her shoulder, and those dark suspicions that had been brewing bubbled up again. Land titles are public records, Your Grace, Duncan said, telling August that his mind had fallen down those dark paths too, and they wouldn't have been changed that fast.
Where did they go?
He asked Anne. His sister shrugged, her forehead creasing in confusion.
I'm not sure, but there was a hired carriage waiting out in front.
I have to go.
It was absurd, he knew. It was likely nothing. August would probably find Matthias Stilton nattering away in the sunshine, waxing poetic about the breathtaking views of the cliffs and the sea. Because even if Stilton believed that Clara still owned Haverhall, that knowledge did him no good. If the man was angling to gain control of the land, he would have to marry her and convince her not to convey the property to trustees before he did, which seemed wildly far-fetched, didn't it? Mr. Stilton is a friend, one whose honesty I value, Clara had said. Marriages had been built on far less than that. Forget the land. The purported wealth behind the Strathmore name was still legendary, and very desirable, especially when attached to a beautiful woman. August ran an agitated hand through his hair. He was overthinking this, and he needed to temper his paranoia and jealousy. But he couldn't. Not where Clara Haywood was concerned.
August?
Anne's beautiful blue eyes were full of concern.
Is something wrong?
No, he said. Just something I need to check on. I'll come and find you when I return, he said. I shouldn't be more than an hour.
I'll probably be in the art studio then, she told him.
He bent and gave his sister a brief kiss on her forehead before he stepped away, leaving the tavern sign in her grasp. Would you like me to accompany you? Your Grace? Duncan asked.
No,
August said, already headed for the door.
I'll take care of it myself.
Chapter 15.
What do you think of the view? Stilton asked her.
Clara stepped sideways, as the man was just a little close for her liking. They were standing on the edge of the cliffs, the castle looming behind them, the carriage left up on the narrow, snaking road above. Stilton had insisted that they walk down the sloping land, following the thick outer wall that led away from the castle proper and down toward the sea. And Clara had agreed, if only to pass the time before she could ask to return without appearing rude. To her right, the town sat far below them, nestled at the edge of the ocean in its nest of rolling green fields and jagged white cliff faces. Above them, gulls wheeled and cried. "It's very lovely," she said, trying to keep her smile from slipping. Anne had been right. She should never have agreed to come. While she enjoyed Stilton's company in small doses, an entire afternoon of his non-stop talking was starting to wear thin. He meant well, she knew, and she couldn't really blame him for her lack of enthusiasm or her distraction. That was solely on the shoulders of one Duke of Holloway.
"I'm so glad you accepted my invitation," Stilton said, sidling closer once again. "There is a matter I wished to discuss with you."
"Oh?" Clara asked, wondering what he would say if she insisted that he take her back to Avondale now.
"We've known each other for quite some time," he started, "and I have enjoyed your company immensely."
"And Rose and I have enjoyed yours, Mr. Stilton."
"Matthias."
"I beg your pardon?"
"I think we've known each other long enough that we can dispense with the formality, don't you think? I'd like to call you Clara, if I may."
Clara frowned. "Mr. Stilton, I don't think that is entirely appropriate. While I value you as an acquaintance..."
"And that is something I'd like to change."
"I beg your pardon?" Clara felt alarm start to slither through her. Surely Stilton wasn't about to suggest what she thought he was going to...
"I'd like you to be my wife,"
he hurried on, reaching for her hands and clutching them in his. Clara stared at him. This was not happening. "While you flatter me, Mr. Stilton, I am going to have to respectfully decline."
"But why?"
He looked genuinely confused. "Because I don't wish to marry you."
"It's not like you're going to get a better offer," he said,
and there was an edge to his words now.
"Especially at your age."
"Mr. Stilton, I can assure you that even as a younger woman..."
"No one wanted you when you were younger," Stilton told her. "Even your family's wealth wasn't enough to buy you a husband then. Do you honestly think anything's changed?"
He drew their hands up to his chest. His palms were cold and sweaty, and Clara resisted the urge to yank her hands from him in revulsion. "Again, Mr. Stilton, I do not wish to..."
"No one else wants you," Stilton continued, "but I am prepared to make you my wife."
Clara felt a familiar anger rise, tempered with disgust. "I am not prepared to have you as my husband."
"Is it because I'm not a duke?" he hissed. "You think you're too good for me?"
"That's not it at all." She tried to extricate her hands, but he tightened his grip.
"You won't do better than me,"
he told her coldly.
"With your wealth added to mine, we could live in grand style."
Clara tried pulling away again, but Stilton held fast, his fingers digging into the flesh of her hands painfully. "Mr. Stilton,"
she said through clenched teeth. You must understand that I have no desire to marry anyone, yourself included.
You know nothing of desire,
he said, yanking her closer.
But you will soon.
His strength caught Clara off guard, and she stumbled into him. Stilton let go of her only to dig the fingers of one hand into her hair and use the other to grasp her underneath her chin, pressing it against her throat. He made a sound of satisfaction and dragged her mouth to his. His kiss was wet and slimy, and Clara struggled to wrench herself away, but he only twisted her hair more painfully in his fist.
Stop!
Clara snapped, letting her fury overwhelm the very real fear that was starting to thrum through her. If she screamed, there would be no one to hear her. There had been no one in sight when they had walked down to the cliff's edge. She pushed on his chest with her hands, managing to shove herself back a few inches, even though his fingers still held fast in her hair and against her throat.
This isn't what I want. This isn't what you want,
she grated. She'd never seen this coming. Looking back, she wondered if she'd missed the signs. Perhaps she simply hadn't been paying enough attention. Today, or at any point in the last 2 years that she'd counted him an acquaintance. And now, she was paying for that lack of vigilance.
I know exactly what I want, Stilton breathed.
His hand slid from her throat to her breasts, and he shoved his fingers into the top of her bodice. She heard and felt some of the stitching give way. His breath was hot on her face.
I want more, and you can give me that.
Clara twisted her head vainly.
You've teased me for long enough,
Stilton said, and his voice had a coldness that Clara had never heard before.
Years I've catered to you and your oddities. I'm done waiting. You will marry me. I'll make sure of it. She can't marry a corpse.
It came from behind Stilton. Stilton's head jerked up and his hands loosened in Clara's hair long enough for her to jerk herself away. She staggered back a few steps out of his reach, her breath coming in harsh gasps. The Duke of Holloway was standing just behind Stilton, his hands loose at his sides, his body perfectly still. But it was his expression that sent chills shuddering through her. His eyes were feral, his expression black, and there was a dark, barely leashed promise of violence rolling off his body in palpable waves.
"What are you doing here, Holloway?"
Stilton spit.
Deciding if I should just toss you off the cliff, or if I should kill you before I do it. You wouldn't.
Stilton was backing away from him now.
You have no idea what I would and wouldn't do. Stealing my birthright wasn't enough for you, was it? You need to steal my woman from me too.
There was utter hatred in those words.
She's been mine all these years. Not yours, Holloway. It's been me who has put the time and effort into this. I know you think you can take whatever you want whenever you want it, but I came here to make sure you didn't. To make sure I finally got what is mine.
August moved faster than Clara would have thought possible. In a single second he had his hands fisted in the front of Stilton's coat and was lifting and pinning the man against the thick curtain wall of the castle. Stilton's boots twitched above the grass.
I didn't steal your birthright. I bought a business that had been ruined. And Miss Haywood has never been yours.
August growled.
She damn well is.
The lady's struggles beg to differ.
August said conversationally.
She is to be my wife.
Your wife?
His eyes flickered to Clara, lingering on her neck, and the redness that she knew would be visible where the man's hand had squeezed. His gaze slid back to Stilton.
I didn't hear her say yes.
She will.
Stilton struggled to no avail.
Do you wish to marry this cockroach, Miss Haywood?
The Duke asked.
No.
Her voice was rough.
I didn't think so.
He pressed his forearm against the man's throat.
Should I kill him?
That would be messy.
But satisfying. And the tide's going out. It would be at least a day until they found the body, if they ever did.
Don't kill him,
Clara said unsteadily.
He was just leaving.
He was? Well then, I suppose that is a lucky coincidence for you, Stilton.
Stilton was sweating, though his eyes were mean and hard.
You don't want me for an enemy,
he spit. Clara saw something shift in August's eyes.
You should go now, Miss Haywood,
August said in a voice so chilling it made her shudder.
No.
Clara took a step toward him.
Go, Clara.
Don't do it. He's not worth it. Please.
She saw August hesitate, every muscle in his body rigid. He suddenly stepped back and Stilton collapsed in an undignified heap at his feet.
Leave here. Leave London,
August snarled.
Or I'll make sure you're on the next hulk destined for Australia, provided I don't kill you first. If you dare show yourself to Miss Haywood, her family, or myself again, Miss Haywood's words will not be enough to save you.
Stilton struggled to gain his feet, stumbling like a drunken jester. He yanked on the front of his gaudy coat and fled past August, staggering up the incline and to his waiting carriage. Clara watched him go, suddenly racked with shivers. There was a maelstrom of emotion swirling through her, and the individual feelings were difficult to sort out. Fear, disappointment, anger, shame, regret, relief. August closed the distance and wrapped his arms around her, and she leaned into his strength, hating how unnerved she felt.
I was so foolish,
she mumbled into the front of his chest. I never should have come out here alone with him.
You are not foolish to trust someone you've known for years,
August told her forcefully.
What happened just now is entirely on Stilton, not you. You did nothing to deserve that.
I never encouraged him,
she said miserably.
And I certainly never wanted to kiss him.
I noticed.
August's voice rumbled in her ear.
God!
She squeezed her eyes shut briefly before pulling back.
How did you find me?
Anne told me you had gone for a drive. It wasn't hard to follow the sightings of a peacock in a chartreuse coat.
Clara made a muffled noise.
Why?
Why what?
Why did you come looking for me?
August was silent for a long moment.
A brilliant woman once told me that jealousy did not become me.
That woman knew nothing.
August was silent.
I would never have married him, Clara said fiercely, no matter what he did.
I don't think Stilton anticipated that.
Clara bit her lip.
Would you really have killed him?
Yes, if it had been necessary to protect you.
His voice was flat.
How very barbaric of you,
she said, and the tremor she could still hear in her words was no longer just from her ordeal.
Did you know that barbarian was a term that the Romans gave to everything and everyone who wasn't them?
He asked, and Clara knew he was trying to distract her now.
The Greeks used it first.
she mumbled. August made a funny noise. That is not the point. My point here is that in truth, the barbarians were courageous, cunning, and ruthless, and, in the end, drove the Romans all the way back to where they had started.
Are you fishing for compliments, Your Grace?
She felt the pull of a smile. Possibly. Probably.
Then I rather like your barbarian tendencies, she said wryly. All of them.
Good. So you won't mind if I do this?
Without warning, he bent and scooped her up into his arms. What are you doing?
Taking you back to Avondale.
What? You can't wear... I don't...
Once we are there, if you are so inclined, you will ask me to stay for dinner.
I will?
Yes. Because I finally have an answer that is good enough for the question you once asked me.
Oh. She laid her head against his shoulder. I'm having dinner tonight with the students. Lady Tabitha and Lady Theodosia as well.
Splendid. I'll join you.
He heard her laugh softly. You might be the only male in attendance.
Splendider.
That's not a word.
It can be for a man who took to slaying dragons on behalf of his fair lady,
he said lightly. You insult the dragon family, for Stilton is not so noble.
You're right. I always fancied dragons to be green or blue, and not chartreuse.
Clara sobered suddenly. Thank you, she said, for everything. August pressed a gentle kiss to the side of her forehead.
You're welcome.
Chapter 16. The ride back to Avondale was a slow one. August, not willing to risk the legs of his already tired horse that now carried two. Which was just as well, because it took him nearly the entire journey to rein in his emotions and compose himself in a manner that wouldn't terrify the next unsuspecting person he came across. When August had seen Stilton forcing himself on Clara, a rage such as he had never experienced flooded through him. When the red had receded from the edges of his vision, colours had seemed brighter, noises louder, every movement a little more pronounced. Looking back, he wasn't sure how he hadn't killed the man, how he hadn't simply ripped Stilton apart limb from limb, or beaten him to a bloody pulp. Perhaps he had recognized the need to defuse the situation for Clara's sake instead of making it worse. Battering a man to death would not have helped, though the man certainly deserved it. He did not want to take a chance that Clara would feel guilty about that, too. August hoped Clara's watching the man scurry away with his tail between his legs had lessened the impact of what he'd tried to do. What had happened had not been her fault in any way. Stilton was a coward and a cretin, and not worthy of any further thought, and he hoped that Clara believed that. Clara seemed to recover on the way back. She regained her colour at least, and he engaged her in a debate over the theories of Aristarchus that had her talking and occasionally laughing. The feel of her body as it rested in front of his was torture. Her warmth and her scent enveloped him, and he wanted to keep her there forever, wrapped in the safety of his arms. He reined his gelding to a stop in the drive and helped Clara dismount. She looked up at him, her eyes troubled. Please don't say anything about what happened this afternoon. Not yet. She put a hand to where her bodice had been torn. I'm going to change, and then I will speak to Rose and Harland when he returns.
Given the Baron's chronic absences, August rather thought it might be Christmastide before her brother returned, but he refrained from pointing that out. No one else needs to know. Not the servants, not my students. She was looking at him imploringly.
I understand, so long as you understand that it wasn't your fault.
I do.
Good. I'll see you in and up to your room.
That's not necessary.
Humor the barbarian.
She nodded. Very well.
Besides, I have my own conversation to finish with Anne. She said I could find her in the studio when I returned.
I might remind you to wait after you knock this time, Clara teased, and it made August happy to see her smile. August led the way up the stairs. The house was silent, everyone seemingly occupied somewhere else, including the servants. Clara hurried down the south hall toward her rooms while August wandered in the direction of the studio. He was almost at the end of the hall when the studio door opened and a woman stepped out, her blonde hair tumbling in ringlets around her face. She was wrapped in a heavily embroidered robe more suitable for a boudoir after midnight than a grand house in the middle of the day. She turned, and with shock, August recognized her. More than recognized her. In fact, 5 years ago, he would have recognized her more easily had she been wearing nothing.
Lady Shelley,
August said dumbly. The woman froze. Your Grace, she replied with the same incredulity, her green eyes widening. I beg your pardon for my appearance. I was hoping to make it back to my room undetected. We thought the house was empty.
We?
August blurted. Miss Hayward, Rose Hayward, Lady Shelley clarified. Her initial surprise faded, and her lush lips curved into what August could only describe as a smug smile. I've commissioned a portrait.
In a robe?
In costume, she said vaguely, that same smile still playing about her lips, seemingly unconcerned about her déshabille. I was on my way back to my room, to change.
You're staying here?
Just for the day. I did not know you were staying here as well. Goodness. It's like a house party.
No such luck, August replied. I'm here on business, for the Earl of Rivers.
Too bad. You know what they say about all work and no play, Your Grace. Lady Shelley teased. And you work entirely too hard. Rose suddenly appeared behind her, wiping her hands on a paint-smeared rag. Who are you? Her eyes went to August and narrowed, and her lips thinned. You again? My apologies, Lady Shelley. I should have insisted you change in the studio. I should have known His Grace might be lurking about the hallways. This is unacceptable and most embarrassing. Oh, it is of no consequence, Lady Shelley said easily, with a throaty chuckle as she headed down the hallway toward her room. His Grace has seen me in far less than a robe. August cursed inwardly. Rose's eyes narrowed even further. Of course he has. Lady Shelley laughed again. There are benefits to widowhood, Miss Hayward, she called back with a saucy flip of her hair. Many, many benefits, and I will never apologize for them. Rose sent August another withering look before tossing the rag onto a small table just inside the door. What do you want? She demanded.
I had come looking for Anne,
he said evenly. As you can see, she's not here.
Indeed. However, Since I am, I'll extend the courtesy of passing along your sister's wishes to have a word with you as soon as possible.
My sister is out for the afternoon.
She is back now.
He tried to keep any inflection from his words. She shut the studio door firmly behind her. Is she all right? Is she hurt? Is something wrong?
She is fine. She just needs a word. I believe she is in her rooms.
Rose brushed by him, heading toward the south wing, skirting the stairs and disappearing from view. August slowly followed her as far as the stairs before he stopped abruptly. He glanced in the direction in which Rose had disappeared and, still finding the hallway deserted, turned back the way he had come. He strode purposefully down the hall until he was standing in front of the studio door, wondering if he had completely lost his mind. He had done more skulking and spying and sneaking in the days since he had become reacquainted with Clara Haywood than ever before in his life. Without wasting another moment on second-guessing himself and his motives, he opened the door, slipping silently into the room. On the dais, the settee he remembered so vividly was still there, though it was empty, and had been draped in a swath of brilliant emerald silk. Directly in front of the platform, a large easel stood, holding a long, rectangular canvas. A small table, covered with brushes and palettes and neatly organized pots of pigment, rested beside it. Surrounding the dais in a wide arc, with the students' easels and art supplies resting on small tables, one beside each station, waiting for their return. August wandered around the room, studying the drawings and sketches. They showed an eclectic selection of subject matter and no common thread, other than that the compositions had all been made with graphite and charcoal. Someone had sketched a garden, the likes of which might have been found at Versailles, complete with reservoirs and fountains and what looked like plumbing lines. Alongside were sketches of plants and flowers, a jar half filled with water and a small bouquet of roses sitting next to the easel, no doubt having provided some inspiration. Next to the gardens were a completely different set of sketches, and it took August a good minute to comprehend what he was seeing. Anatomy diagrams. What looked like a heart dissected with the tissue drawn back to expose the insides. A set of lungs, vessels reaching out from each like the branches of a winter oak. An empty tray rested beside that easel, and August chose not to consider what it had once held to provide inspiration. He took a step back, his eyes going to the next easel. This was Anne's. He recognized the bold strokes and the clean lines right away. She had drawn schematics of what looked like a coaching inn. Given the amount of space and detail dedicated to the stables and yard surrounding it, he peered more closely, noting the large rooms at the front, designed for eating, and the kitchens and storehouses in proximity. It was an efficient design, with careful consideration given to the flow of people from one space to another, something the Trenton Hotel was lacking. He frowned. Perhaps he did need to reconsider the layout of the hotel. And perhaps he could consult with Anne. You made me your partner, and there is nothing in the world I value more. He found himself smiling reluctantly. He turned away and found himself in front of the long canvas directly across from the dais. This must be what Rose Haywood had been working on, because the brushes here were still damp, and the smell of turpentine strong. The canvas had been covered with a light, filmy cloth, and before he could reconsider, he pulled one corner of it, letting the cloth flutter to the floor. The woman gazing out from the canvas at him was instantly recognizable, and breathtaking. not because she was beautiful, but because Rose Hayward had somehow managed to capture the sultry confidence in Lady Shelley's expression that August found so seductive in any woman. It was evident in every line of the body, stretched out on the green silk, clothed only in the subtle light that the artist had captured with superb skill. Costume, indeed. This was a woman who knew who she was, who wasn't trying to hide the long scar that stretched over her generous hip, or the purple birthmark that graced the upper half of her thigh. It was all there, on the canvas with no apology. When August had been Lady Shelley's lover, she'd been ashamed of what she thought were imperfections. She'd tried to cover them with clothes or sheets, or darkness when that wasn't possible. He hadn't let her. And now, looking at the image of the woman, he was glad he hadn't. Perhaps he had, in some small way, contributed to the confidence of the woman gazing out at him. "She's beautiful, isn't she?" August jumped like a schoolboy who had been caught sneaking into the pantries. He hadn't heard Clara come in.
"She is,"
he agreed. "Did you love her?"
"No, but she made me laugh,"
he said. "Among other things?"
"Among other things,"
he agreed again.
"Her husband, the Marquis, was not very kind to her during their marriage. I was her first lover after he died. Our affair lasted as long as it took her to understand that she deserved better than what her marriage had offered, that she was free to seek her own happiness."
That's what she said when she commissioned Rose to paint her, that she wished to be painted like this because it pleased her. Just her. No one else.
"I'm glad she's happy."
August bent and picked up the sheet, then settled it over the painting once more.
"I must assume your sister found you."
"She did," she said quietly. "I think it would annoy her to know that the two of you are more alike than she would ever care to think. She also offered to kill Stilton, though in a way that would have met with the Inquisition's approval." Clara paused. "And she too said that what happened wasn't my fault."
"Smart woman."
He watched her out of the corner of his eye.
"How are you feeling?"
"Much better." She let out a breath that was half laugh, half sigh. "I suspect listening to the merits of thumbscrews will do that." He wanted to draw her into his arms, hold her, and kiss her senseless, lay her down on that green silk, and make her forget everything that had happened to her that day. Instead, he clasped his hands behind his back, unsure if she was ready for that.
"How did you know I would be in here?"
"Your barbaric tendencies."
"Very funny."
"You're not shocked?" She gestured at the covered painting. "By this?" August let out a bark of laughter.
"When it comes to this studio, I'm all out of shock," he said. "Get back to me next week and I'll see what I can do to find some."
He paused.
"Though I admit to having been taken aback by what appears to be a set of lungs over here."
He gestured to the smaller easels. Clara smiled wryly. Their students were asked to sketch what interested them. There were no limitations or requirements other than that they would present their work to the rest of the class with an explanation. "You'd be amazed at what I've learned about swine organs this week."
"Why are you doing this?"
August asked suddenly. "What do you mean?"
"What do you hope to achieve? At the risk of sounding like an utter ass, once these girls go back to their families, back to London, they won't ever have another chance to do this sort of thing. Interests are not encouraged, not these anyway. You know it, and I know it, and they know it as well. What can possibly come of all this?
Clara gazed at him. You tell me.
What?
Earlier, you said you had an answer for me that was good enough. I'd like to hear it now, instead of at dinner. August looked away.
I made Anne a sign.
A sign?
A tavern sign for the Silver Swan. She had designed one. I had it made from her sketch.
An expression he couldn't decipher crossed her face. Has she seen it?
Yes.
And? He dropped his gaze.
She was pleased.
I'm sure she was, Clara said gently. Were you?
Yes.
Was this a one-time overture? She asked. Or are you willing to admit that your sister has so much more she can offer?
I've never doubted her intelligence or her abilities. But nor do I want her to worry about things any more. The price of fish, the efficiency of the hotel kitchens, laundry services.
He threw up his hands in exasperation. Which is very noble. But by doing so, you've taken away her sense of purpose. He ran his hand through his hair.
Anne doesn't need to...
Did you know that my father gave Haverhall School to my mother as a wedding gift? Clara asked suddenly, interrupting him. August blinked, hating the now familiar guilt that instantly stirred every time the name Haverhall was mentioned. He didn't want to hear anything about Haverhall that didn't involve surveyors' reports and revenue projections. He did not want to know how deeply entrenched the school was in Clara's family, or to be reminded of the legacy it represented to her. My mother grew up in a home where the only things she was responsible for were choosing which dinner dress she wished to wear and ensuring she used the correct dessert spoon. Clara continued. If she were still alive today, she'd tell you what she told us. That she felt trapped, miserable, and so bored she could scream. Imagine her surprise on her wedding day when her husband presented her not with pretty jewels or a flashy horse or a fine house as a wedding gift, but an entire school. And the purpose, challenge, and expectations that came with it. Things that make a person feel alive, useful, important. August could feel a muscle working alongside his jaw. Resentment edged out the guilt, and he clung to it like a drowning man.
It has never been my intention to trivialize Anne's existence, if that is what you're implying.
That is not at all what I'm implying. Clara softened her voice. I know Anne lived in Marshalsea. August flinched.
How did you know that?
She told me. She gestured around her. Look, I'm not trying to change the world. Well, maybe I am, but not overnight, not in my lifetime even. But what would happen if enough women believed in themselves? Believed that they could do more than what they've been told they can do? She sighed. I'm not so delusional as to forget that the world we live in is real, and we must all adapt to it. The classes I teach in London during my regular terms are not groundbreaking by any stretch of the imagination. But occasionally, a young woman attends those classes who, like me, believes that things could be different. And I invite her out here to explore just how much. August stared at her. Clara exhaled loudly, her cheeks pink. I'll stop talking now. Although you've passed on my earlier invitation to collect your sister and run screaming back to London, I wouldn't blame you if you did so now. She sounded as if she was only half joking,
But if you're sending the Bedlam stewards after me, can you at least wait until the end of next week?